Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Let's talk now about Jeanette McDonald, who is many things: a comedian, an actor, a writer, producer, director, a member of the Order of New Zealand Merit for services to entertainment. But perhaps you know her best as...
Hello, Tawa, and good evening, New Zealand. Hi, Mum. Oh, my name's Lynn, and I come from Tawa. That's up the line a bit, eh? The psychiatrical hospital's up there. Oh, that's at one end, eh? The Borstal's at the other.
Lynn of Tawa, of course, there, and New Zealand on Screen, NZ on Screen, has just released the Jeanette McDonald Collection, celebrating her trailblazing career with videos of her comedy and her television work and interviews as well, preserved online for all to see for free. So, joining us now is Jeanette McDonald herself. Kia ora, and thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Emil. And a little bird told me you have a very exotic middle name.
Yes, Jumpakunga is my middle name.
Emil isn't gorgeous enough. Jumpakunga. Well, yeah. I think you should go by that henceforth.
Jumpakunga. Nights with Jumpakunga here on RNZ National. It's lovely to have you here. You have a collection. Congratulations. That sounds very esteemed. Does it feel esteemed?
I tell you what, it's a myriad of emotions, Emil, because I didn't know, frankly, they did it for people who were still alive.
Right.
So there's that. And then someone I know, vaguely associated with the thing, said, I'm not supposed to tell you, you know, a while back, but we're doing an anthology of you. And I said, am I dying? Because, you know, I'm given to the dramatic. And I honestly became quite alarmed. I've been through a myriad of emotions about it, and also sort of guilt too, because it was a long time ago, a lot of what I did. I mean, 40 years, really, and more. And I think there's so many people around that are worthy of... And then I think, oh, get over yourself. And so I'm just having this constant... battle with myself.
It's interesting to hear you say that maybe you felt a sense of I'm probably paraphrasing you wrong here, but sort of embarrassment, you know, the idea that there are plenty of people who have done stuff as well, and yet you're the one who's being anthologized here. Is that something that you felt, that you have felt throughout your career as an actor and a writer and a producer and a director,
I think too much about everything, but thinking about it, everybody operates best when they're doing what they can do, what they know they're capable of, and not overthinking it. Mm. When I was younger and there were more opportunities and I was offered them or, you know, went for them, I just was occupied with getting on with it. Mm. And I still say get on with it.
It must be interesting to reflect, as you say, you've been reflecting on this, and it must be interesting to reflect on how dramatically the TV and media landscapes changed over the decades. Because I think I'm right in saying that you saw the very first ever TV broadcast in New Zealand. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe it was. Well, all I know, we knew television had arrived in New Zealand, and I don't even remember the year. And we were a large family. And Michael, my brother, who went on to write the Lynn of Tawa thing, 4 years older than me. And I don't know if I was 7, 8, or 9, but something. He came home and it was dusk. I think it was winter. So about now, really. And he said, Dan Dallas, the radio doctor, has got TV in the shop. we just dropped everything. And I remember my mother saying, what about your supper? And Michael and I ran literally all the way up Moxham Avenue, which is several miles. We ran all the way up to Stan's shop. It wasn't a big shop. It was literally a radio and a record player shop. And there was a TV on a shelf. And all the kids, had all the neighbourhood kids were squashed in there, sitting on the floor.
Well, it must have been like an alien life form.
Well, it was. All I remember about it were these ducks or geese or something flying in formation across the sky in some dreary British landscape, you know, in black and white. But we were just enthralled, absolutely blown away by this miracle. And we stayed there for ages, watching whatever it was. I was always attracted to anything beyond our shores and exciting. And we, at my rather difficult private Catholic school, we suddenly got these two American girls called Patty and Donna. You know, and it was like something. They had names like out of a the Donna show. And I, of course, befriended them. They were exciting, and their father was a rep or something, or a managing director of Roscoe Ice Cream, American ice cream they were trying to market in New Zealand. Right. Anyway, I got my wheedled an invitation to their house, which was very upmarket place, and we watched TV there, and the footage came in of the Kennedy assassination.
Wow.
And Patty and Donna's mom, who was a petite little woman with a Mary Quant haircut, just cried inconsolably. Of course, they were a Catholic family, you know, and he even had the father had a crew cut. Yeah. Anyway, it was all these memories. And at that point, that's when I thought, TV is a really powerful medium, you know.
Yeah.
And later on, when I was training to be a director, they kept saying to us, television, our responsibility is communication to educate, inform, and entertain in that order. Mm-hmm. And God knows what they'd make of Celebrity Treasure Island and Married at First Sight. I mean, God, what have we come to?
We got a wee taste of your gift for voices and accents just then, and indeed I think Lynn of Tawa was born of a voice. Where do they come from? Have you always been a performer? Were you encouraged to perform and be creative and sparky as a child as well?
Well, everybody performed in our house.
Right.
My father had a practice, and a medical practice. He was a GP, the most eccentric one in the Wellington.
Wonderful.
Probably. There were only four of them, and one of the doctors was Dr. Diana Mason, who was a very formidable woman with huge earrings and robust views about everything. But Dr. Diana Mason was married to Bruce Mason, the playwright.
Right.
The first significant 20th century New Zealand playwright, and a man dedicated. He was very, very affected, Bruce, you know, and he had a very triangulated sort of voice. But he could do any New Zealand accent, but he also, and didn't bang any drums or anything, was determined to give Māori an equal place on the stage. Mm. And I'd known Bruce Mason since I was sort of born, and when I was a lumpen, unhappy teenage girl at school, I was also apprenticing myself to downstage theatre, and Bruce got me in a play because my mother was half French. He mistakenly thought I spoke French.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. Well, I could do the accent, and I sort of understand it, but I've never been able to. But it was a maid that spoke nothing but French in an old card play. Mm. So I was there with Bruce, and I was also the stage manager of the play. So I've really done my craft. With people think I'm a lightweight. I know I certainly did every aspect of training, not really paid very well. But it was backstage. Bruce was doing all these accents, and I was joining in, and he said, "Oh, Jeanette!" Roger Hall and I are doing a late night show, and maybe you could do something. And I said, "What could I do?" Because I was at that point, I was 16 then, and I thought, I've got no personality of my own.
Right.
I'm in my happy place in the theatre where I can pretend to be other people.
Yeah.
And so I said, what would I do? And he said, well, just think of a name of a character, and Roger and I will help write you a monologue for it. And so they did. That's how it started, anyway.
You said something interesting there. You said, you've done your training, but people think you're a lightweight. You might have said that in jest. But I am curious, do you ever resent Lynn?
Oh, I'm past that now.
Did you before?
I sort of, look, it's most peculiar. I don't know what to say. I was never, I didn't have the natural physical advantages of somebody like, say, Joanna Lumley as an actress.
Right.
And even at my most young, and when you're young, you're always sort of a bit luminous. I was never considered a beauty, and in fact, my mother was a very outspoken woman, and I wouldn't say exactly supportive of either of her daughters. And when I said, I'm going to be an actress, she said, don't be ridiculous. You're not really attractive enough.
Really? No, really?
I know. And I thought, well, up yours. I'll do it anyway.
Yeah. Now, Jeanette, I wanted to talk a bit about stuff other than Lynn of Tawa. And you and I have something in common. Both of our careers were heavily influenced by Ross Jennings. Ross gave me my first ever job in journalism, working on a political documentary, and he got you into directing, didn't he?
Ross Jennings is an unsung hero, really, of broadcasting.
Yeah, well, because you would have been seen as sort of not only an actress but a woman, and therefore, you know, getting into the cherished directorial program it would have been quite the scandal, I would have thought at the time.
Well, it was even worse than that in a way, and I really, oh God, I'm not going to be overly humble, but there were others who should have been on that course before me. Now, how it worked in those days, we were doing the soap opera at Avalon, but it was a huge, great family there.
Mm.
So all the staff who worked in various departments, lighting, sound, current affairs, what have you, everybody was on a salary, you know, and doing quite well compared to today, and much to the resentment of a burgeoning independent film industry. But I honestly, and it was part of that attractiveness thing too, I honestly thought, I've got no shelf life as an actress. I really don't. But I have always loved the idea of being on the other side of the camera. But I do need help to get there.
Mm.
So I just went into Ross's office and said, Ross, I need to come to the end of my performing career. And this is where they could be forgiven for thinking I was a liar, because it was after that that Lynn of Tawa took off, but that's neither here nor there. I said, I want to give up acting and I want to be a director of drama.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I have the temperament or anything else for it, and I will be guided. Whatever you say about it, you know, I'll take that. And he said, I think you would be a very good director of drama. Well, that wasn't true either, but really. I mean, to be a good director, you have to have a painter's eye, and you have to have an understanding of physics, you know, light, refraction, and so on. I could direct performance, and that was about it. But by today's standards, I suppose I was all right. But anyway, Ross got me onto that and encouraged me in every way. And then of course, because Ross was quite, how do I put this daintily? Well, he was an attractive, red-blooded man. So I think they assumed that I'd somehow done something unseemly to get on the score.
Right.
And also, I'd grown up with six men in the house, so I didn't operate with men like other women did. You know, I was quite straightforward. But anyway, Ross helped me for whatever reason, and he was...
He believed in people, and that is a rare commodity sometimes when you're starting your career, isn't it? You know, you need the confidence of people who know what they're talking about.
Well, that was another thing that's given me, made me think about mentors. And not everyone is lucky enough, like you and me, to have mentors. But if I've got any advice to anyone in any industry, really, if you feel an affinity with someone who can help you, don't be afraid. Don't suck up to them, but to ask for their help. Ask for their knowledge.
It's you've had an amazing career. It's it's quite something, this collection, and the things you've accomplished. I've really enjoyed chatting to you today as well, Jeanette McDonald.
Have we come to an end?
Indeed, yes. Yeah, we're out of time, I'm afraid.
I just quickly tell you that,
yeah, please.
Things have changed so much now, you know, with security and everything else, and God, politics. Well, thank God we haven't time to talk about that and how that adversely influenced our industry. But I was at Government House in the 90s, and I said to Dame Cass Tizard, we're shooting a small drama starring me, and this sitting room would be ideal. Because it's a rich woman. She said, well, you must use it. And so we were up in that main swanky drawing room of Government House shooting her new life for TVNZ, thanks to the Governor-General. Now, would that happen today? I don't think so. So, you know, it was the golden age of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeanette McDonald, it's been lovely chatting to you.
Oh, well, it's been lovely talking to you, Emil, and Chunga Wunga. What's your name?
Jumper Kunga.
Jumper Kunga. You need to adopt that forthwith. Anyway, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, babe. Bye.
And that was screen legend Jeanette McDonald, and you can find that collection on the NZ On Screen website.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.